remembers dying.
By Aurelius. Read by Cyrano II. For the 2013 Podtor Who Holiday Challenge. He remembers dying. He remembers dying, and the drums have stopped, which means he must be dead, logically. The master is a fan of logic, but he's also been dead before. Only once, but more than enough to make a lasting impression. And he knows what to expect from it. He expects nothing. Not even silence, which implies a consciousness able to appreciate the lack of sound. There is only pain and falling, and then, if you're lucky, waking up again, not dead anymore. That he is able to remember this implies that, wherever he is now, he isn't dead. There were contingency plans, of course. Lucy, the ring, the doctor's loneliness, another morphant form, another human body. But he's been alive before as well, and this doesn't feel like life, either. It feels like nothing, which is what death would feel like, assuming you could feel it. The plans have failed. This is something else. His new universe is white and quiet, like the human idea of heaven. If it is heaven. How ironic that he should end up there after everything that has happened. Though if it is heaven, he has arrived on a serious off day, because the master doesn't feel very peaceful. He feels bored and angry. Being stranded in eternity with only your own mind to while away the eons sounds more like hell. It's true that, if there is a hell, he probably belongs there. But it doesn't explain why he escaped it last time. How much more badly behaved had he been since he last died? Yes, there are a few billion more deaths on his hands, but nothing worse than usual. Anyway, the doctor brought them all back to life, didn't he? It isn't fair that they should still be held against him. And besides, if heaven really has set an acceptable limit of 7 billion deaths on a conscience, someone ought to have said something. He would certainly have spared some of the ones he hadn't killed personally. They weren't even fun. He frowns, and he can feel it. The skin between his eyebrows creasing in annoyance. When he puts his hand up to check, he finds that his fingers have feeling. And what's more, he can see his own hand in front of his face. It is the same hand he had last time he looked at it before he died, which is just lazy. There could at least be some sort of perception filter. He finds he can sit up, and that he has been lying down. The white silence is still complete, but it doesn't seem to go on forever anymore. It feels like a zero room. He laughs. This, he says again, is a zero room. Come on, you can tell me. It's a zero room, isn't it? Doctor, I know you're there. Come out, wherever you are. There is more silence, and the master purses his lips and tries to stand, though he still has no idea where the floor is. Look, I know you're there, he says again, once he's standing. Because this is a zero room, and I'm not controlling it. But I was lying down on something, which means there someone is. Ipso facto, you're lurking and watching me, which is just rude, really. When nobody replies, the master shouts, Doctor! And is surprised to find it sounds desperate, rather than angry. Doctor, I'm bored! Get me out of here! He starts walking in an arbitrary direction. Theoretically, zero rooms can be infinite in space, but most aren't. It all depends on the controlling consciousness. The doctor probably wants him to feel like he isn't a prisoner, so it's possible that he will be walking for a long time, but then again, perhaps not. It's something to do, anyway. He walks. What might be minutes or years pass, and the walls are still out of reach. Infuriated, the master stops and yells, "Doctor!" again. No one responds, and the master realizes what the doctor must be waiting for, what he would be waiting for if their situations were reversed. "Please," he says quietly. "Doctor, please get me out of here." There is a second or a week's pause, and then the doctor materializes in front of him. "Hello," he says cheerfully, ruffling his own hair as he does so. "Did you call?" His smile is wide and boyish, like they've been out boating or something equally wholesome. And the master thinks, "Insufferable prat," but with a rather fond relief. The doctor looks just the same as he did the last time they met, but, like the rest of the room, he is strangely white. It's not that he's wearing a white suit, though why the doctor chooses not to in his day-to-day life is a mystery, given his obvious messiah complex. Perhaps it makes washing the blood out of it too difficult. No. The doctor in front of him is clearly wearing a dark blue suit, maroon tie and trainers, yet he is also all in white, as if a filter has been placed in front of him. "I thought you ejected your zero room," the master says conversationally.
"Yes, I did,"
the doctor says. "I built another one, though. Handy things to have around, zero rooms. Plus, I quite enjoyed building it. You know, bit of a challenge. Haven't built anything so complicated in centuries, and of course I'd lost the instructions, so I had to make up most of it. I think it works, mostly, but it's difficult to tell. My first one came free with the TARDIS. A free gift. Much better than a pen. Mind you, I could use a pen. Martha seems to eat them. But I could also use a zero room, which is why, of course, I made another one." The master smiles thinly. "Good idea, using it as a prison." The doctor looks briefly puzzled, then smiles and laughs again.
"Oh, you mean the rack. That was just fun. I didn't think we'd manage to get it through the door, but, well, we couldn't just leave it. But once we managed to get it inside, it turned out the swimming pool was empty. Drained dry, just like that. I don't think the TARDIS trusted Philip. That was his name, Philip. Very much. Fortunately, the zero room was up and running again, so we installed Philip there. Before dropping him home. It wasn't really a prison, though. More of a sort of a temporary holding area."
"This is all fascinating," the master says. "But I was talking about your more recent prisoners."
The doctor frowns again. "We haven't had any more recent prisoners."
"What am I, then? An honored guest? I suppose you think this is mercy. Well, it isn't. This is imprisonment, the same as I gave you, but at least I had the decency to acknowledge it."
"Ah," the doctor says sadly.
"I see. You think this is a zero room?"
"Well, of course it is."
"I'm sorry," the doctor says. "I thought you knew."
"Knew what?"
The drumming has stopped, hasn't it? The master's eyes narrow.
"What do you mean? What have you done to me?"
"I haven't done anything to you. I don't even really exist here."
"No," the master says, stabbing the air in front of the doctor angrily. "You've done something. What is it? Tell me."
He is panicking now.
"Let me out. I want to leave. Doctor, let me out. Let me out. Please, I don't want to stay here forever. Doctor, please, you can't."
He backs away and finds a wall suddenly behind him. "It's happening again," he thinks, sinking to the floor. The doctor in the white light. He can almost see the others on the Valiant chanting his name. But this time, the doctor doesn't wrap himself around the master and hold him like a child. He waits for the master to cry and shake and sob, and then holds out his hand. Come on, he says, and the master takes his hand and stands up. Now they are touching. The white filter, or whatever it was, fades away, and the doctor is colorful and whole once more. The master raises their linked hands and smiles rather wryly. I take it I have you to blame for this, he says.
The real you.
Oh, yes, the doctor says happily. All my fault. That's forgiveness for you. It has repercussions. The master feels like punching him, but only for old time's sake. So this is death, after all. It's just this time there's more than nothingness. This time there is the doctor's forgiveness. And strangely, this is okay. The doctor leans forward and kisses him gently. And even though the master knows, logically, that he must be dead, he feels alive. The end.